Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to this edition of In Depth with Stephen Strang. I try to probe and get to the bottom of the story, to pull out answers that will give my readers and my listeners insight into people who are significant. I ask them about how they got saved, how they received the baptism of the Holy Spirit, how they met their spouses. I try to dig down and get them to talk about things that are important, their successes, their failures, because even though these people are well known, even though they have their own media platforms, they don't often have an opportunity to talk about this side of their life. So I'm inviting you to tune in, to download, to listen, and to share In Depth with Stephen Strang. Hello, everyone. I'm trying a little different format for my In-Depth with Stephen Strang. This is for November 1st, 2019. The nice thing about a podcast is it will be online a long time, and as I'm finding out, I'm getting over half of my podcast downloads from previous podcasts, which is kind of interesting that they would still be interesting after all this time. But I wanted the listeners to know when I'm doing this because my intention is to resurrect my In-Depth podcast and to do it on the first of each month and to drill down in depth. Often I will interview someone. That's what I've done in the past. But I found it increasingly difficult to do it in person. And while I was finishing my new book, God, Trump, and the 2020 Election, I decided to put In Depth with Stephen Strang on hiatus for a few months until I could kind of come up with a new strategy. Now, it's been interesting for me to see what's happening with podcasts. I started in June of 2015. It was actually the same month that Donald Trump declared that he was running for president. That's how I happened to remember it. And in the first 3.5 years, I got about 500,000 downloads. For me, I thought that was pretty significant because I had no experience doing podcasts. Everyone who knows me knows that I started off in print journalism. I was actually a newspaper reporter. I was trained at the University of Florida Journalism School. We typed on manual typewriters. And of course, this was before the days of the personal computer and long before the internet. We could not have imagined how much the internet would change everything and would change journalism. And today, journalism is very, very different from when I was trained. At least back then, there was a modicum of objectivity, which seems to be gone in the era of Trump. And today on In Depth, I'm going to drill down and talk about why he must win in 2020 and what is really at stake. And this election has really started. The Democrats, of course, there are many candidates. None of them seems to be a clear front runner other than Joe Biden, who does not have much charisma at all. Neither does Elizabeth Warren. Really, none of them do. None of them have connected with the electorate in the same way that Donald Trump did 3 years ago. And I believe that this whole impeachment nonsense is because the Democrats know they cannot defeat him. They know they can't defeat him. They know that their only chance is basically to hound him out of office or to steal the election in some way. In my new book, God, Trump, and the 2020 Election, which will come out in January, I even talk about how Donald Trump might lose the election. The first chapter is why he must win, and the second chapter is why he might lose. And it boils down to two things. If the conservatives, and especially the Christians, stay home because they are complacent, and if the other side steals it because, let's face it, they're very dishonest. More dishonest, it almost seems, by the day. And I think it's like the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. Brett Kavanaugh was a wonderful, wonderful nominee to be judge. And the Democrats opposed him, not because he wasn't a good judge, but because they oppose any conservative and certainly anyone that Donald Trump would nominate. And when they saw they could not defeat him, they threw these baseless charges at him. They just came out of nowhere. They were baseless. They were never proven. They weren't proven at the time. They haven't been proven since then. In fact, if anything, it's been proven that it was all a lie. Yet they thought, hey, if they could hound him so much that he would just throw up his hands and withdraw his name, or maybe if the president would withdraw the nomination, they would have accomplished the same thing. They would have defeated him. Of course, it didn't happen. But that's what they're doing with the impeachment inquiry. In fact, it's been reported quite a bit, at least in conservative media, in the last couple of weeks, that the Washington Post, on the day of the inauguration, January 20th, 2017, ran an article, and the headline said something to the effect of, "Now the impeachment begins." And this was just a couple of hours after he was sworn in as president. And the article was really about a website that had been launched. He hadn't had a chance to do anything, good or bad, certainly not high crimes and misdemeanors. But it's like they didn't believe that he should have won, and they wanted to just get him out of office. And they have been looking, looking for anything at all, anything trivial. And even the current impeachment inquiry, which, centers around all this nonsense about the Ukraine, saying there was quid pro quo and then that there was a cover-up and so forth. I mean, how can you have a cover-up when the president fairly quickly released a transcript of the entire call? In fact, they called it a whistleblower. Actually, it wasn't a whistleblower. It was actually a leaker. Someone leaked it, and they didn't even need the person. The person was not an eyewitness. It was second and third hand. It read like a legal document. He had met with Adam Schiff. It was all made up. There was a strategy. Hey, we can find this whistleblower, and we'll use this. And remember how Adam Schiff even made up this whole dialogue, and then later when, I guess he didn't think the president would release the transcript, and he just sort of made up things that the president supposedly said, which he didn't say at all, and then he said it was a parody. Anyway, it's a big mess. If you follow the news at all, you're familiar with what I'm talking about, and I decided on November 1st, 2019, which is exactly a year to the week. It'll actually be the third, will be Tuesday next year. But the election is a year from now, and I thought it would be a good time to start talking about the election and talking about my new book. Now, if you know anything about me, you know that I wrote God and Donald Trump, which was really my way of putting on the record how that God kind of interceded in that election. I was listening to Eric Metaxas recently, and he made the statement that he wasn't a big supporter of Trump. He's a New Yorker, and, so is Donald Trump, and he had a certain opinion of Donald Trump based on just knowing him for years. But he said that he was a never Hillary-ite, and I thought, well, that describes me too. I would have voted for anyone but Hillary. And, Donald Trump was running against her. And by the time that Donald Trump had gained the nomination, it seemed clear to me that he was very, very friendly to Christians and that a lot of people I respected in the Christian community were already supporting him. And especially from the Pentecostal community, which is kind of unusual because in evangelical circles, there's certain sort of, I'm going to call them evangelical elites, who will sort of be the point people for representing the conservative Christians in the political arena. And they often like to sort of decide who's going to get the evangelical support, and often they do. But often we Christians will back the wrong candidate, and or we'll back someone who says one thing when they're running, and it seems like the Republicans will say whatever they need to say to get our vote, but then once they get in office, it's very different. Of course, back then we didn't know what Donald Trump would do, but he has turned out to be very, very different. Donald Trump actually keeps his word. And if anything, he seems to be growing closer to the kinds of issues that are important to Christians, things like supporting Israel. No American president has supported Israel more than Donald Trump, with the possible exception of Harry Truman, who is the first, of course, to recognize the state of Israel just a matter of minutes after its rebirth was declared by David Ben-Gurion on May 14th, 1948. Now, that reminds me of something that you may find interesting. I actually write about this in my book, God, Trump, and the 2020 Election, because I write about different numbers. Now, I'm not really into numerology. I certainly don't lead with that. I certainly don't form a theology around it. Of course, I'm no theologian. I'm a journalist and an observer of the Christian community. I'm a committed Christian, of course, and believe that we have to see things through spiritual eyes. But I did find it interesting, and I discovered this by interviewing people. In fact, I interviewed Pastor Steve Coccolanti from Australia, and you can go back on the Charisma Podcast Network and search for it, and I think you'll find it. And then I incorporated this into the book, and that's this. Donald Trump was born on June 14th, 1946. It just happened to be a blood moon. Now, you can speculate on what it means for a blood moon, which is actually an eclipse of the sun in which the moon looks red, and so they call it a blood moon. They do not happen very often, and often they will fall on significant days, and it just so happened that he was born that day. Then if you count exactly 700 days later, 700, and to Christians and in the Bible, the number 7 and 70 and 700 and so forth seem to have some significance, but you go forward 700 days, it was the rebirth of the state of Israel on May 14th, 1948. And while I'm at it, I'll just mention that when Donald Trump was inaugurated on January 20th, 2017, he was 70 years, 7 months, and 7 days. Now, what does all that mean? I don't know, but it does make you go, I wonder what God is up to. But my point is that Donald Trump has been very strong to support the state of Israel and to move the United States Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and actually did it on the anniversary of the 70th year, here, 7 again, in 2018, exactly 70 years after Israel was reborn. And there's a lot of other things. He's been, Donald Trump has been very strong advocate of life, against abortion, especially what they call late-term abortion. And some of the Democrats are actually calling for abortion to, after a baby is born. If the mother meant to abort the baby and something happened and it was born live, there are some who are saying that the child's life should be taken. I call that infanticide. Donald Trump in the State of the Union a year or so ago said that it was executing the child. And I thought that was a very interesting and appropriate choice of words. But getting back to when Donald Trump ran, we knew, number one, that he was not Hillary. We didn't know a lot about Donald Trump. We didn't know how he would serve as president. But we knew what Hillary Clinton was like. And thank God, in his mercy, he spared us from that. And there were Christian prophets. Chuck Pierce was one. Mark Taylor, who I've interviewed on my podcast. You could go back and listen to that podcast as well. He said as far back as 2011 that God was going to raise up Donald Trump. Lance Wallnau, who's a friend of mine, started saying that God was raising up Trump like Cyrus and that he would be elected. My friend Frank Amedia, a pastor from Ohio, very, very clearly was saying during the campaign, when it didn't look certain at all that Donald Trump would win, he kept saying that he would win. And even on election day, right up until the polls closed and the newscasters were all talking about, which states were voting Republican or Democrat for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, they were saying that Hillary was going to win. And she was shocked. The entire Democratic Party was shocked. The far left was shocked. And they're still in shock. They still can't seem to accept that Donald Trump won. And I believe that all this mess about impeachment is just an attempt to hound him out of office. And a weaker president would have just resigned like Richard Nixon did and just faded into the sunset. But they don't know Donald Trump. He is strong. He is tough. He's a survivor. He seems to even thrive on it. I personally believe that Donald Trump is going to win re-election, but it is not certain. And so that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book to try to do what I could to alert Christians to how important it is that he wins. I write in the book that in 2016, God raised up Donald Trump to lead America to pivotal time. Evangelicals who recognized this backed him more than any other presidential candidate in history. Heading into 2020, the stakes in his reelection are even higher. This election, 9 months after this book releases, is a new fight for the soul of America. And in the book, I make the case that God wants America to be great because God raised up America, beginning with our founding fathers, to be a beacon of light and a hope for the world. We've been the nation with religious liberty that has supported those who have spread the gospel around the world. In the book, I look at the election, Donald Trump, and America from a spiritual perspective, and I help the reader see God's hand at work. The book is as much about God and his purposes as it is about Donald Trump. But it's also what I believe is an articulate, impassioned apologetic about why all Christians must support this president, as imperfect as he may be. Because Donald Trump has God's blessing and because the destiny of America is riding on his reelection. My book also explores why he might lose. God, Trump, and the 2020 election is an inside look at how the political climate is affected by spiritual warfare, which is an important subject for Bible-believing Christians. The satanic schemes are so brazen on key issues that the book was written to explain what's at stake. I believe that the intersection of faith and politics needs to be a part of the national discussion about the division in this country, and it's why I wrote this book. So now I want to share something that was actually on Town Hall this week. It's actually an excerpt from the book, and someone told me that Town Hall has 9 million readers, and so I was very happy when they picked this up as an op-ed. And I hope that you enjoy this. It's actually from the beginning of the book and kind of sets the stage for the book. America has had some difficult periods in history, and I lived through one of the worst. I came to age during the radical anti-Vietnam War era in the late 60s. I remember the riots at the 1968 Democratic Convention when radicals tried to take over the party. We saw the same sort of street violence over the Vietnam War that we see today against Donald Trump in what is almost a repeat of that era. As a student journalist, I covered the riots of the radicals at the University of Florida. I reported on the protest after the shooting deaths of 4 students at Kent State University in May 1970 for the student newspaper. The following year, I called in a story to the United Press from a payphone. Remember them, inside the University of Florida administration building after it had been seized by radicals. I remember the rhetoric and the inflamed passion of the radicals. And the only time I've ever experienced tear gas was that day when the police fired tear gas on the students to make them give up the administration building. It was an eye-opener for me to see the student newspaper firmly on the side of the radicals. It was a foreshadowing of today's leftist fake news media. One of the other newspaper staffers even claimed to be a communist. The radical societal changes I saw surfacing when I was a student came as a shock for most traditional Americans. They refused to believe what was happening until it was almost too late. Fortunately, after years of turmoil during the Nixon, Ford, and Carter administrations, some normalcy returned when Ronald Reagan was elected president in 1980. America has a long history of lively and often extreme political discord, going back to the time of John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, whose acrimonious political fight must have seemed extreme after our first president, George Washington, was elected without opposition. But the acrimony then was nothing like what we've seen in the past 60 years. With the left becoming more and more extreme, it was as if the people said, enough is enough. When Trump was elected in 2016, the American people sent a message to Washington that they wanted change. It was a message the political and media elites missed. So they were shocked by Trump's decisive win in the Electoral College. Even though Trump lost the popular vote to Hillary Clinton, our Constitution set up a system in the Electoral College that protects the small states from being overpowered by the more populous states. Trump won because he took three states the Democrats thought they had in their pocket: Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. But he only won by roughly 80,000 votes spread over all three states. That's less than 1% in each state. Ralph Reed, the respected conservative political strategist that I interviewed for my new book and that I've interviewed on my podcast, told me this was not a blowout. Trump's campaign in 2020 is entirely different because while he's been fighting since 2016 to make life better for all Americans, the left has grown more extreme in its radicalism. It's becoming more dangerous than I've ever seen in the history of our country. Meanwhile, Trump has become the unlikely hero of most conservatives, including evangelicals and charismatics. They see his courage to stand for the truth. They see his unprecedented presidential support of religious liberty, life for the unborn, and Israel. While the country has lurched left over the past few decades, Trump has at least slowed the momentum. Christians have sensed a reprieve, and it has emboldened them to take a stand like they hadn't recently. Conservative news sites, and even Christian ones, are more prominent. Some Christian movies, like Unplanned and Breakthrough, have been big hits, whereas before, few Christian-friendly movies even got a shot at the theater. Leaders who may have been intimidated into silence are again taking courage from how Trump speaks the truth and survives the onslaught from the politically correct crowd. Let's face it, the same people who oppose Trump almost uniformly oppose Bible-believing Christians. If Trump loses, we not only lose the benefits we have gained from some of his executive orders, but we lose a champion and a real American leader. And that's how my op-ed ended. There's a lot more in the book, and as the book comes out and as I start doing a lot of media for it, I will talk more about it. I purposefully have not talked a lot about the book until now. I didn't want to kind of wear out my welcome, but I believe very, very strongly that this book and its message is important. And I wrote it because I want to motivate Christians to go to the polls. And I'll talk more about that later, including on my Strang Report, which is my daily podcast, which in the month of October was the highest ever, right at 250,000 downloads, which is more than I used to get in an entire year. And my downloads in 2019 are already up to 1.2 million. And I want to thank you because it's been listeners like you who have downloaded my podcast day after day and have also posted it on social media and forwarded it to friends and neighbors. It's how people find out about my podcast. And then when they go on the Charisma Podcast Network, they see other podcasts that they like. Not only my podcast, but we have a whole variety of podcasts. In fact, the podcast network is growing very, very quickly, and the new podcasts are quickly developing a very loyal and large following. And I'm very pleased about that because the whole reason I started my company 47 years ago was because I felt that I needed to report on what the Holy Spirit was doing and what was happening in the Christian community. And the secular journalists basically don't cover Christians unless it's something really, really odd or maybe something that they want to criticize. And I've done podcasts on this before, especially when Kenneth Copeland was ambushed by Inside Edition. I just said, hey, listen, this is so predictable, I could almost predict what they said before I saw the program. And that actually was my highest podcast up to that time because it really struck a chord with people. And I've reported on this before. But that's why I started, because I felt that there were stories that needed to be told and things that I should be able to share that I actually had to create a platform in order to do it. And by God's grace, we survived those early years, and Charisma became a leading magazine. It still is. A lot of people still like to read the magazine in print. But we reach only a fraction in print that we do online on our charismanews.com, on our charismamag.com, which is actually the website for the magazine itself. And I encourage you to check those out. Check out our app. We have a Charisma News app that people like Dr. Michael Brown tells me it's the first one he looks at every day. Jim Baker told me the same thing. And we work very, very hard to make it up to date. I like to say that it's the charismatic Christian version of something like Breitbart or some of the other conservative websites. And our website, thankfully, is growing. And it's growing because I believe that we're meeting a need. And that's what's happening with our podcast as well. So I'll wrap this up by thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing it. Send me an email and tell me what you think. Give me ideas for things that you'd like me to go in depth about, especially as I move to this once a month format on the first of each month. You can write me at info@charismamedia.com and your email will be forwarded to me, and I'll be glad to respond. So thank you for listening today to In Depth with Stephen Strang. It was a little bit different format. I just felt that I needed to go in depth a little bit about the election and my thoughts about what's happening with Donald Trump and the impeachment and all the mess that's happening in our country. There's so much that can more that can be said that should be said. I'll share more in the future, and of course, there are others who are also speaking out. But it's a minority. It's a minority that are speaking up. It's mostly the left. It's mostly the liberals. Even the Christian liberals control a lot of the Christian media. And perhaps that's a topic that I'll delve into later. So I'll wrap this up. Thank you for listening. And God bless you.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.